Welcome, everybody. We're about ready to start our meeting. I'd like to call to order the June 16, 2016 regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Luke is absent. Mr. Pleasant's absent. Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. Thank you. And before we start, I would like to acknowledge our board member, Ed Pleasant. He is he's battling a very serious health issue right now, so our thoughts and prayers are with Ed and his family and the medical staff. So just wanted to make that comment. So now if everybody would rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. There it is on the wall. Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay, I need a motion to approve the agenda for our meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Ms. Powers, second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. You know, pretty quick roll calls here tonight. So tonight, I believe we're starting off with a presentation from Education First. And I believe Ms. Bingman is going to come on up here with Justin. It is, yes. I thought you said Joy was going to come on up.
Yes, Joy, do you guys want to come on up? Yes.
Or let's just Justin Price.
Do you want to come with him and introduce him?
Sure.
No pressure?
Well, I did nominate the school district because I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And in his position, I think it's even cooler that he's getting to present and be in town.
Right. All right. And you're certainly a great advocate for global education and travel.
Yeah, you're not giving yourself as much credit as you should. Well, I'll start off. How many of you that are here have been out of the United States before? Hands up and let's just see, just out of curiosity. Okay, I think that's a pretty good representation of Marysville School District and why we're giving a Global Education or Excellence Award to the district. So just a couple things to point out. The first thing is that I noticed, too, when you walk around the commons here, you see a bunch of different flags from different countries. Does anybody know what those represent? All the different students that have come here as exchange students to the school, which is really cool. So as you get new students coming from different countries, you have different club flags that are represented. And really for decades, you guys have been doing this. You have students represented from 25 different countries. And how do you think that affects your student population in the school? It's a big difference for these students here in Marysville. They might not come from a very big city, you know what I mean, like New York or Boston or Los Angeles, where you have diverse populations. And so I think that having international students come from 25 different countries over these years really lends a lot of cultural diversity to the students here, and it helps to prepare them, whether they go to a school like Ohio State or they go to Columbia or they go to Yale or something like that. I think that definitely helps students. In the late 90s, your foreign language department started doing a two-way exchange program with Mexico, and we still do that today with Spain and with Japan. Has anybody here ever studied abroad or lived with a host family before? We have one, two?
I have.
Okay, awesome. So those experiences, I'm sure for both of you, really propelled you to who you are today and helps to build your confidence and helps to learn a different language or be used to other customs or foods. And we think at EF that that's super important as well. Through the Chamber of Commerce and the school board, you were able to help open up that Japanese program and Spanish exchange program. So that's a huge thing for a school to be able to do, and not all school districts participate, so we feel that that's really important, too, and why we're giving the award today. And on top of all that, you do immersive experiences for your students here to go travel outside of the country. So people that are here, maybe from the public or even on the board that aren't as aware, every year, just about, you go with someone like Joy Bingman to Europe. You're doing a science-led program to Costa Rica, and then you're also doing a program to Japan this next year as well. So a lot of opportunities for students to be able to go abroad, whether it's doing service learning projects, you know, just learning about the history of Europe, different leadership projects abroad. It's a lot more than maybe even like 10, 15 years ago where you were sort of taking a school bus and going to see places like the Eiffel Tower. These programs go a lot more in depth these days, and students can be getting high school and college credits, so it really does make a difference for them as well. The other thing that I found about, which is kind of cool that Joy told me about, you have two Swedish college students that came specifically to visit the high school here to see your STEM program and the ag program at the school, which I thought was really neat, to be able to open up your doors to other international students in a different capacity that aren't even in high school. So with that being said, we definitely want to present you with the Global Excellence Award for this year. We have a little plaque here. We have this little guy that you can put up as well. And we want to thank you for continuing to offer global opportunities for the students in the district. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next, we're going to have a reading presentation from Steve Griffin, our Director of Literacy.
So as you guys know, Steve started with us last summer, I guess, kind of. Definitely when he came in the door, two focus areas for us were definitely Edgewood and Navin, two of our most at-risk populations in the district. And before he kicks off, his charge was, I said, go in there, help the principals figure out what's going on, and let's make some positive gains in those buildings. Third grade reading scores came out, and those two buildings in particular were significantly above mm-hmm. the state average and show great strides with their students. It's not just Steve's work, but Steve going in, asking questions, probing people to think a little bit differently about what they're doing in the classroom, but I think it's definitely a result of that collaborative effort. And certainly a good way to kick off tonight. Both scored 71%, I think, just in the spring assessment. Mm-hmm. So we're thrilled with that accomplishment. So we ask him to come tonight and kind of highlight some things that have taken place this year and some things that are on the horizon going into next year.
Well, President Devine and Superintendent Mankins, members of the board, I'm excited to be able to finally be in front of you and share a really productive school year in our elementary buildings and at Creekview. I get the honor and the privilege of being the mouthpiece, but I want to say right up front, everything that we're going to share tonight was a collaborative effort, starting with you guys with all day, every day in kindergarten, the support that we received from Diane and Jonathan in the central office, the principals, our literacy coaches, reading specialists, teachers, and our kids. Before I begin, one of the reasons I'm here is in the winter, Ed Pleasant called me in and wanted to meet to talk specifically about what we're doing for our struggling readers, especially our readers who have a profile that fits the term dyslexia. We met for about an hour, and he said, hey, this is good stuff. I want to get you in front of the board, and I'm disappointed that he can't be here. But like you said, he's in everybody's thoughts and prayers in the family. If you'll indulge me for a moment, I gave you a handout so you can follow along. I'm going to start and just kind of set the stage for our discussion and read you a quick poem. And I know what our super is thinking right now. This is so elementary, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. You have a copy, and it's up on the screen. I take it you already know of cough and bow and cough and dough. Others may stumble, but not you, on hiccup, thorough, laugh, and through. Well done, and now you wish, perhaps, to learn of less familiar traps. Beware of heard a dreadful word that looks like beard and sounds like bird. And dead, it's said like bed, not bead. For goodness sake, don't call it deed. Watch out for meat and grape and threat. They rhyme with sweet and straight and death. A moth is not a moth and mother, nor both and bother, broth and brother. And here is not a match for there, nor deer and fear for bear and pear. And then there's dose and rose and lose. Just look them up in goose and choose. And cork and work and cart and ward and font and front and word and sword. And do and go and thwart and cart. Come, I've hardly made a start. A dreadful language, man indeed, man alive. I mastered it when I was 5. I like to read this when I talk because it speaks of the complexity of our language, and the bottom line is we need to give our teachers and equip our schools to give kids every advantage to learn to read, and our teachers every advantage to teach kids to learn how to read. When I first started here, people, I got asked a lot, so what are you going to do? What's your vision? And it's tough when you're new, especially in a leadership position, because you have to ask questions, but you can't ask too many questions. You make people mad. So my vision at the very beginning of school is no different than it is now. And it is to make sure that our teachers, no matter what reading profile walks in the door, especially one of a struggling reader, our teachers feel like, I have an answer for that. And for the Marysville schools to be the gold standard for teaching kids how to read, whether you're a kid with dyslexia, a typically developing kid, or a gifted kid, that you learn how to read and you achieve at a very high level in literacy. So I want to talk about tonight one of the profiles of our struggling readers with dyslexia. And when you say dyslexia, you could pull everybody in the room and you probably get 15 to 20 different definitions. There's a long definition that talks about the neurological system in the brain, but it's easier to just illustrate than it is to read. There's the brain of a typical developing reader. Basically, in the left hemisphere, three areas are engaged. That's a neurological look of the brain when it's reading well. There's the brain of an impaired reader, a student who's at risk or has what we call dyslexia, which is not seeing words backwards. A lot of people think that it's flipping of words. It's a glitch in the posterior reading system where the brain doesn't engage the other two areas to help it cut through this really complex text. We put some things in place district-wide this year, started a lot of things this year, and then we're going to expand them to 16-17, and I wanted to walk you through that. So sort of a recap and looking ahead to 2016, I want to start with this acronym, the CTOP2. In your folder, there's a handout that has some highlights on it. Probably more information than you want, but I've highlighted the most important things for you. The CTOP acronym for Comprehensive Test of Phonological Processing. When you're talking about struggling readers or at-risk readers or impaired readers, that neurological look in the brain, the CTOP at a very early age can let us see which areas are firing. We have CTOP'd a lot of kids this year and really defined risk level and the areas of the brain that aren't working together so that we could specifically design instruction for those kids. Next year, every kindergartner in October will be given a CTOP. That will, without putting them under MRI and looking at the brain scan, it will let us see engage risk level so we can get out in front of it. The mistakes that a lot of districts made, and we do this in public education, is we wait for problems to happen with reading towards the end of first grade, second grade, third grade, where neurologically you've got to get out in front of it in K-1. With the CTOP information on every kindergartner in our district next year, and we've CTOPed a lot of first graders and kindergartners that were struggling. With having this information, we can get out in front and prevent the reading problems before they actually occur, which is a good advantage. So if you look at the next page, the CTOP will look at three areas: phonemic awareness, phonological memory, and then rapid naming. Those are the three composites of the assessment, and then if you look at your next page, we can assign risk, and we'll call it a single deficit, a double deficit, and a triple deficit. So if you score below average on any one of the measures, it would be qualified as a single, double, triple, and so on. And then we spent 2 days this year collaborating with our 10 reading specialists and our 3 literacy coaches, talking about, okay, we have this information, we're going to get this information, but so what? What are we going to do about it? We design carefully design intervention tracks at all levels. So where you see tier 1, think classroom instruction. Tier 2, if we design anything above what goes on in the classroom, that can be delivered by a number of individuals, but we'll put our reading specialists on the front lines of that. And then tier 3, which would be kids that are moving through those tiers and need the protection that IEP provides. And it's important to differentiate. An IEP, we don't need an IEP to individualize instruction in our district. We need an IEP to formalize plans and to provide protection for kids. But we're going to start individualizing instruction the moment they come in the door and try to keep those kids from getting on IEPs. So you'll see these tracks. So we're not guessing what to do. We know exactly what to do, and it's a matter of just looking at the profile and then making swift decisions. This was really the culminating piece of work after 2 days of, we called it the reading specialist retreat, sitting down, looking at the CTOP, understanding neurological dyslexia and struggling readers, and then designing interventions that were closely aligned to best practices in literacy. Something that happened very early on in the fall when I stepped into my office, one of the first things I wanted to know is, where are our kids with phonemic awareness? That's that phonological processing aligned to the CTOP. And we didn't have the answer for that. We did not have explicitly that data. So what we did very early this fall is we put a full-blown phonemic awareness curriculum in every kindergarten and first grade classroom. So we could see the kids who have it, see the kids who don't have it, and then see the kids that could go either way, and then again put them into instructional tracks to make sure that they achieve it. Phonemic awareness is key. It's the number one indicator for future reading success. So it's important that we can say every 5- and 6-year-old has it mastered. It can't be a yes. It needs to be a no. And now we have the instruction and the data in place to answer that question. If you flip your page, you'll see we redesigned our high-frequency and sight word list K-2. One thing that's important with the struggling reader is to have elements. Not only do you need to be timely, but you have to have elements of intervention or instruction that are closely aligned. So if it's a classroom and then they're working with a reading specialist, there has to be an alignment of those things. This redesign of our high-frequency and sight word list aligns us very closely with a program that I'm going to talk about that our reading specialists were trained in, called the SPIRE program, which is a formalized version of Orton-Gillingham, which is the kind of the gold standard for kids with dyslexia. So this scope and sequence of how words progress, there's a clear hierarchy from list 1 through list 7. And now our teachers kind of have a script to teach alphabetic principle phonics, and we can observe and measure who has it and who doesn't. Now, the real reason I put this list in here is because I want to talk about the impact of all-day, everyday kindergarten. Okay? So highlight list 5 on your list. Last year's kindergartners that were on the red-blue schedule, there are this year's first graders. At the end of first trimester this year, the highest percentage of our kids were on or near list 5. Okay, so at the end of first trimester, first grade, 3 months into school, they were pretty much around list 5. When we look at our kindergartners this year, our to-be first graders next year, the average student is past list 7 and has mastered 5 additional lists. Yes. So we've talked a lot with the coaches, with our first grade teachers, pretty candidly, like, hey, you're going to have to rethink the first trimester of first grade, because our kindergartners have far exceeded what our current first graders did at the end of the first trimester. So it was, it's exciting to be a part of a school district and a community that values early childhood literacy education. It's paying off, and there's concrete data that tells us that this is going to be a huge payoff as we follow that class. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We did the same thing this year with a second grade sight word committee. They said, well, should we look at our list? And I'm like, yeah, we probably should. So we just extended the K-1 sequence into second grade. This is more information than you want. It's got terms like orthographic shift on it, which I won't explain because I go way past my 10 minutes that Diane gave me. But it's just a continued progression next year of what we've already started K-1. Okay, so happy to put that in place. Okay, sound sensible, inspire. If you flip your page. So what are we going to do with kids that really need an extra layer of support? Maybe a double deficit kid in kindergarten that through our careful monitoring of phonemic awareness or sight words, hey, they're not keeping up, and we need to do something about it. There's another layer of support that we put in place. And after our reading specialist retreat, which happened in February, we brought the reading specialist back in May 20th. And we train them in two programs, Sounds Sensible and then the Spire program. There's an overview here of what the Spire program is. And here's where the support from our superintendent and assistant superintendent, and Ken Jude and Kristen Jones, everybody who has a stake, which is all of us in the literacy lives of kids. We found the money, and we equipped our reading specialists. I provided a lot of the training, and then we asked some teachers from other districts to come in and meet with us. And our reading specialists are leaving after a day diving into the Spire, and then they have the whole summer to really breathe into it, and they have the materials. So when we get that double deficit kid, it's not a mystery of what to do with it. It's the question for districts is, are you equipped to do it, to pull it off? So admiring the problem is one thing. We have an answer and a solution to the problem. And the Spire program is research-based. It's aligned to the gold standard of intervention that you would provide for these double and triple deficit kids. And our best reading teachers, our reading specialists, are on the front line. So I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. And hopefully keep them from ever making it past first grade where they need that IEP. So we have the Spire and the Sound Sensible. Next year, we started in districts in part to really start looking at oral reading fluency, which is another huge indicator that helps us project out risk. Next year, we're going to screen every second, third, fourth, fifth, two through four in reading fluency at least three times a year, so we don't get surprised. Reading fluency data is critical to have, rate and accuracy, and we'll have that on every student, and that'll just help us make better decisions for kids. So our reading coaches ran point on that, trained in staff meetings, and what was great is I've done a lot of trainings around things like Ames Web and reading fluency, and our teachers were so ready and willing to just say, yep, this is what we need to do because it's best for kids, and it was really refreshing, and it was nice. RAS Kids is, in a nutshell, a way for kids to listen to stories and have stories read to them and take little mini quizzes via technology. The reason I put RAS Kids up there is it wasn't just to get kids reading books, but to get kids bombarded auditorily with being spoken to. When you're under headphones and a book's being read to you, those neurological profiles, it fires at all three areas. The exciting thing about RAS Kids is that we listen to and read close to 200,000 books in our elementaries. 200,000. Wow. That's a lot. And that's just one program. Mm-hmm. When I called the RAS Kids representatives in Arizona to help them, I need to find data, the lady on the phone was like, is this your first year with the program? I'm like, yeah. She's like, that's like really good data. And I'm like, is it? You see it? And she's like, yeah. And it speaks to the level of commitment our teachers have for our kids. Okay. New technology, we put it into play like kind of last minute. It was like we were 2 weeks into school. Hey, you got RAS Kids. And just like that, they used it and outperformed other states. We give the tools to our teachers and they're using it, which just speaks to their professionalism and their dedication to kids. Our speech language pathologist, there is a strong correlation between our TIC and language issues that go to see the speech teacher. I'm a speech pathologist by license, by the way. And struggling readers. In our staffing request, I asked, hey, if we could have a speech language pathologist, we could do something for every building for every kid. We got that request, and now our speech pathologists are staying put in one building across our four of our five elementaries, and they're embracing a dual role, and they're going to help with early literacy intervention with kids that have risk factors with speech. Kids who don't hear and can't say sounds or kids that struggle with reading. If we're going to screen all these kids, we'll probably drum up more business, and now we'll position our SLPs to get involved in the game because they do more than just fix R's, S's, and L's. They have a lot of expertise, but administratively, we have to support them and put them in a place where they can expand their reach, and we've done that for next year. I'm excited about that. And by doing that, we've also opened up a collaboration with the Ohio State Speech and Hearing Grad School, because there's an externship opportunity available to them for speech pathologists that are in dual roles. So one of the things we did is we talked to them and said, hey, if we put our SLPs, what can you give us as far as grad students? And she says, I can't give you the exact number, but I can double what you've had before, Steve. What I had before was four, so I'm hoping that we'll have 8 grad students in our district working with kids. And these are highly qualified to be SLPs. The good news is I'm a part of the department at Ohio State, so I get to interview them and pick the cream of the crop. Okay? Yeah. So that's a good thing too.
We won't tell anyone.
Yeah, no, you can tell them. I don't care. I don't do it to anybody else.
Okay.
You can get them. The iReady curriculum, another big undertaking, but this is a blended learning, adaptive diagnostic that is going to be a new language arts curriculum in grades 2 through 6 next year. We piloted it this year with 15 classrooms. The feedback our teachers gave us is we love this. This will help us move kids and get kids reading. Once again, we were able, through the collaboration of the administration, looking at funds, able to drum up support to make this happen for our kids. I'm excited about the fruit that the iReady is going to bear. I get a little nervous when I look at some of these things next year because they're all huge undertakings and we're doing it at once. But we have such a good team that collaboratively, I don't doubt that we'll pull it off.
There was pretty high alignment with their assessment results and iReady to the third grade results, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Almost on the money.
Already we had a principal that said, Steve, the kids who didn't do well on the pilot didn't do well on the assessment, the kids who did. So it's just another piece of data that we can track kids and make sure that we're getting out in front of it. We do not want surprises in the spring.
Right.
So the blended learning 2 through 6 is iReady. Next year we'll explore a blended learning K-1, which is Lexia Learning Seeds. We have 2 grants submitted right now that if we can get that funding, we can begin to provide seeds for kids that you'll see in your intervention tracks or your instructional tracks. The priority, this is just another blended learning aligned to Horton-Gillingham scope and sequence that can help kids learn to read. To be continued on that, I'm hoping that the grants come in. We put a response to intervention committee together this year to put some things universally in place to help us manage and track data, which is key, but get most importantly, the big takeaway here is to get everybody across the 5 elementaries and at Creekview speaking the same language. We have different spreadsheets, different terms. We're putting some universal things in place, and that'll just help us share best practice easier and track and monitor kids. And last but not least, we right now have 3 level 1 Horton-Gillingham certified teachers in the district. And in every building, we have at least 1 intervention specialist that's gone through the comprehensive 30-hour OG training. The level 1 certification, it's almost easier to get your PhD than it is to get a level 1 certification. And we have another teacher signed up for it next year. And that's through the work of our Spec Ed department with Kim Jude. So encouraging teachers to take that on. So I'll leave you with this. 2 years ago, through really awesome circumstances, I found myself in the span of 12 hours on a plane headed to Jamaica on a mission trip to build houses. You'll notice I'm not in the picture because I'm more of a liability with power tools than I am without. I just kind of painted the high areas on the houses, but at the end of the trip, the last day, I was sitting, and there's a picture of the exact moment. I was sitting on the side of the hill, and Mark, he's one of the young men that we were building houses for, came up to me and said, "Are you all right, Mon?" He thought I was overheating, and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." And he said, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure, Mark, what's up?" And he says, I'll never forget it. "I've been praying every day that somebody could teach me how to read. Can you help me?" And I looked at him and said, "What'd you just say, man?" And he says, "Now that I have my house, I need to learn how to read. I know I can make something of myself. Can you help me?" And I said, "Buddy, pull up a seat. You have no idea who you're talking to." And I didn't have anything. And we are sitting there. That's me trying to teach him how to read in like 4 hours. And I would ask a question, and he'd literally raise his hand and be like, "Hey, Mark, is it just you, man, in class?" If I ask a question, it's you, right? So he's all raising his hand. But I put this up here because Mark said something very important. Once he got his house and his physical needs were met, the first thing he defaulted to was, "I need to learn how to read. If I can read, I can make something of myself." It is really exciting at the end of my first year here. This is my 17th year in the schools, and I can say without question, it has been the best year, and I am grateful to the board, to Diane, to Jonathan, to our teachers, our parents, our literacy coach is a literacy specialist, because it's nice to be in a spot that collectively understand that, hey, we need to teach kids how to read. They're not old enough to make the statement that Mark made, but someday they'll know. And I'm convinced, and I wouldn't say this if I wasn't convinced of it. This time next year, I believe that Marysville will be the gold standard for teaching literacy. If we can't teach you to read, then I don't think anybody can. And we're not going to be afraid of terms like dyslexia and at-risk readers. And we welcome that, because we're going to be equipped to handle it. And I'm excited about that. And I really am indebted to this district for bringing me on board. It's been just an absolute fantastic school year. So thank you.
Thank you.
Wow.
Very nice, Steve. We can't thank you enough. Your excitement has shown up in every report that we've gotten from the elementaries, and when the literacy coaches have been presenting. I mean, we can just sense that excitement. You go into the buildings, and you just hear a lot of so many great comments about the support that they feel like they're getting, and the guidance from you. So we really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. It's definitely a team effort. I'm just lucky enough to be the leader of it.
Thank you.
I've lived in Marysville a while, taught the district for a long time, and I was sitting here listening to you, and I'm not sure that I can think of anything else that has happened in our district that has the potential to make the kinds of changes that I think we're going to see over the next few years. The kindergarten program, I knew, was the right step for our community. It was the right thing to do for kids. And I know, as we've got reports, as we've gone through all the buildings this year, rolling reports in terms of progress that kids have been making. And to hear you kind of tie all of that in, how the groundwork is being laid to take it and push it even further is really exciting. So thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Next up, we have a presentation from Marysville High School, Mr. Cochran. And by the way, thank you very much for hosting our meeting tonight.
Switch computers out.
Yeah, I was okay. Making sure you're ready. I'm sorry.
All right.
So this would be Mr. Cochran. I didn't know you were ready.
That's all right.
I feel like I'm the student that just taught wasn't paying attention, so my apologies. So Mr. Cochran, you're finishing your first year.
I am.
Did not come when, I mean, everything didn't go smoothly every day, but certainly we've been pleased with some of the changes and positive vibe that's coming out of the high school, and I think that you've learned a lot this year, and I think you have some pretty amazing things in place. I know the board's kind of aware of a couple of the things, but I didn't share too much about them because I didn't want to take your thunder.
All right.
So we'll turn it over to you to kind of highlight the year and talk about some exciting things coming up next year.
All right. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the time, and welcome to the high school. Scott Stackhouse, assistant principal at the high school, is going to be helping me as well. Sean Williams could not be here, but we have some things that he is kind of heading up that we're going to speak about as well.
So kind of along the same format, we're going to talk about a little bit of the highlights of what happened this year and what our plans are for next year. I see an interweaving of both of those as we continue the things that worked, and then kind of tweak what we need to work on as we move forward. I think, thank you for saying that it was a good year. I had the advantage of having a great senior class. For those of you who were at graduation, we had an awesome senior class. We graduated 404 students, 35 valedictorians. They earned the most money scholarship-wise that had been earned. I think it was $4.7 million in the history of MHS. And really, it was just an amazing class. Beyond the 35 valedictorians, to a person, the class was just great to work with, and they made me look good, so I inherited kind of some advantages there. But they are out, and they're going to do some great things. I look forward to seeing what they're going to do. But now we have the other classes that we're going to focus on as we move forward. And we're going to kind of highlight a couple things, not talk too much in depth, but definitely highlight some of the things that we are looking at. Introduction of the Global Scholars Diploma Program. I'm going to speak about that for a brief time. That's a very exciting program where we are partnering with the Columbus Council on World Affairs. We're going to talk a little bit about Student Leadership Academy. Curriculum mapping is what we worked on this year with much of our staff and much of our staff time. Use of data as we move forward with AP testing, AIR testing. We won't get too much into what AIR testing is, but we'll just definitely talk about how we're going to use that data. Common assessments by teachers, and then also the use of teacher leaders to make sure that we're getting better every single day as we instruct our students. I would say the thing that I'm most excited about for next year is really the Global Scholars Diploma Program. What that is that is a Columbus Council of World Affairs partnership. And so there are 10 districts in the Central Ohio area that work with the Columbus Council of World Affairs. We are now going to be the 11th. Off the top of my head, I know that Olentangy works with them, Granville works with them, Hilliard Schools works with them, and there are a lot of districts, much larger than ours and much smaller as well, that work with the Columbus Council. Ultimately, I'm not going to read all of that to you, but what it was a recognition that we are graduating students and therefore having adults in this country that don't have an awareness globally that they need to be successful in the ever-changing world, kind of the 21st century skills that we need our kids to have. So what they did is they have partnered with a lot of the organizations and businesses and government leaders in Central Ohio to really look at these three core areas. I'm going to read these specifically so I don't mess them up here, but cross-cultural skill building and understanding the other, developing awareness of and proposing solutions for global issues, and exposure to global careers and investigating best practices for success in the global workplace. So ultimately what this is trying to do is, outside of the classroom, give those students the skills that they need to immediately be successful in whatever their career is. And we had the opportunity with a couple of teachers to go over to Honda and see one of these things in action. And it is truly amazing the way that the kids really gravitate towards this. It kind of goes along with the aspect of EF tours. It's really getting kids exposed to things beyond what they're used to. It's beyond their teenage lives of social media and athletics and what we go on in the classroom, and really taking that next step. So the exciting thing is students are going to be recognized for being a part of this global diploma program. They will actually get a certificate and recognition on their high school diploma that says that they went through this program. This is a three-year program. Typically, you have someone go in their sophomore year, junior year, and then it culminates in an activity, almost like a capstone activity, their senior year. And the great thing about this is it is really student-driven. The students are the ones that really get to choose a lot of the interests they have, because it is outside of the classroom. Really, students from the interest of the medical field to the interest of some other type of political science background, they can really both enter this program, and it's not just a social studies program. It's really for all students to really kind of follow what their passion is. A couple more things about this, not to hang out too long on this one, but what they're going to do is just kind of give you a synopsis. They will meet four times a year with the groups of the 10 schools that I'd mentioned earlier. And so they will go down to Franklin University and have four specific meetings. And at those meetings, the students are really in charge of running the show. They actually meet with the groups, do different exercises, meet with global leaders from the community. They also meet with people from around the country. There's a lot of partners. Limited Brands is a partner in this. Cardinal Health is a partner in this.
Franklin University, The Ohio State University. They are all partners nationwide. They're all partners that are really kind of dedicating their time and their efforts to make sure that we are producing students who are globally aware. And the great thing is then our students get to meet kids from the Columbus City schools, from the rural schools, and they all mix together, and they just love to be together. And the energy is just really noticeable when you went to Honda, when we went there about 2 months ago. And they had an opportunity to sit down and talk to engineers at Honda, human resources directors at Honda, people from the community that work in Africa, people in the community that have traveled all over the world and been everywhere that you could imagine. And they just sat down with really, it was a 1-on-5 ratio, and they just talked to our kids. And our kids just spewed questions at them and just shot from the hip. And it was an open forum. It was not structured. And it was really just one of the most amazing things. You could really see the energy that these kids had. And that's something that I think our kids are just gonna love. The cohort is anywhere from 0 to 50 kids. So we feel like that we're going to be able to really push the numbers and make sure that we're getting every kid that is wanting to be involved. The nice thing is not during the class or not during the school day, so a student that has a full academic load would still be able to be a participant, and it wouldn't be something that was another class that's a single class that really kind of stops them from taking this. So we're really excited about this Global Scholars Program. It's going to be something that's growing. I think it started 3 years ago. Last year it had 300 kids. Next year it's going to have over 500 students, and we're going to be definitely a part of that picture. This year, I talked about curriculum mapping. The one thing that I noticed really was that we needed to have a solid foundation of curriculum mapping. And to give you kind of the layman's terms of what curriculum mapping is that is making sure that, I'll take Algebra 1 for example, if we have 5 Algebra 1 teachers, that they are really sitting down as a professional team and looking at the pacing of what they're teaching and when they're teaching that would be the first foundational, kind of the lowest hanging fruit. Then what they do is they get together and build common assessments to make sure that they can ultimately judge that what they are teaching is working or not working. And with the Google Docs that we do now have, we have the ability to share that information instantaneously with all of our teachers. And they're putting up their common assessments. They're also putting up the best strategies that they use to match with the pacing guides that they have built together. So everyone's really using their professional input to make sure that we are teaching not just the basic common core, which we've always been teaching, but specifically, here's how much time we're spending on this. If we spend a week on this and our pacing guide says week number one is these particular things, then we're going to use the data from those assessments to see did our kids score well. If they scored well, then maybe we'll look at, is that the right amount of time? If they are not getting the concepts, then we can change that curriculum mapping and the pacing instantly and make sure that all the teachers know what those changes are, and we can change that ultimately in that school year and also very much for the next school year as well. So we wanted to make sure that each department and each subject that was being taught really had this common curriculum map that was going to be the foundation for everything that we do moving forward. So my vision is that 10 years from now, when we're looking at the latest and greatest best practices that are being used, we are still using these curriculum maps because they're truly living, breathing documents. Because of the Google Doc technology, they are just changed instantly. And I can be at home, make a change, it's sent out immediately to all the other 4 partners that I work with in Algebra 1, and then we are all in the know. And then every time that we look at a common assessment, we're going to break down that data to make sure that what we think we should be teaching and the time that we're spending on those tasks and the best practices are really ultimately showing up in student higher success and achievement. So that's something that we're doing this year and also going to be continuing next year. We always want to try to make sure, going along with that Global Scholars Diploma Program as well, that we're really putting kids out front and giving them opportunities to get up out of their seats and become the leaders that are going to really give them the skills that they need to be successful moving forward. Sean Williams, who I mentioned was not here today, put this together. He has been running the Leadership Academy, which is made up of 35 students. These students are 11th and 12th graders, and there is a nomination process for them to be a part of this Leadership Academy. And these are really some of the kids that are the leaders in the school system. What they do is they start with a summer seminar, and in that seminar, there are speakers brought in to talk about the characteristics that make up a leader, some of the things that result in quality leadership, and also some of the techniques that they can use as young adults to be leaders in their school and in their community. This really has a positive impact on the school culture. It the groups that those kids are involved in, and also it has a lot of positive impact on the individuals, because the student body really looks up to these kids as someone who is someone to emulate and make sure that they are following, hopefully, their lead in making good choices, doing well in school, and also making a difference in the community. So we're going to try to expand that. Start Talking, I know that I believe Sean Williams came and did a presentation on Start Talking. Just a powerful program where our kids are really out there saying, you don't have to choose drugs and alcohol, and helping parents have those difficult conversations. My kids are 9, 7, and 5, so luckily I haven't had to have those conversations yet. But I think oftentimes, just like you mentioned, we wait for a problem and then have the conversation. It's really starting those conversations in middle school and in high school, and before your child has an issue, start having those discussions about drugs and alcohol and what are appropriate choices and what are your expectations, and also what ways do they have to avoid those types of things. We also bring in speakers. Sean brings in speakers for kind of giving that role modeling. Ms. Mankins was a speaker this year to the leadership group. Tracy Richardson, councilwoman from Marysville. Chase Blackburn, the two-time Super Bowl champion and MHS graduate. Holly Zweizig from the Union County Board of Mental Health and Recovery. We really want to make sure that we're bringing people in that can answer the kids' questions, and not just bringing them in to talk to our kids, but to really sit down and discuss, what is leadership? How can you take the next step of not just being another student, but really being someone that is modeling? What's the best thing to do when you're in high school? Above the influence. We have our students go down and talk to, just as I mentioned, those middle school kids, and really say, here's how you can be a leader. Whether it's with bullying, whether it's with drugs or alcohol, or behavior in the classroom, here are the techniques that you can use. And I tell you what, these middle school kids really look up to anybody from the high school that comes down to them. You might think that, well, what's a 2 or 3 year difference? But really to them, these are their heroes. Yeah. This is who they look up to. And if you give them the right heroes to look up to, I think you're gonna have some positive things that really we get when we get the freshmen here. And they're gonna be making some healthy choices and see that, hey, these are the kids that we wanna be. Leadership Academy also is on the teacher side of it. We have teachers who are kind of the teacher leaders, and we are looking at expanding that program into a 2-year program where it's not just 11th grade and 12th grade kind of looks the same, you're just a year older. It's really almost like a 2-year academy where the first year you're looking at the education piece of it, the second year a culmination project where you're really saying, hey, I've learned all these skills, now I'm going to go out and kind of where the rubber meets the road, I'm going to make a difference in my school and my community. Next area, just to talk briefly about financial stability. The one thing that we are trying to do is always make sure that our dollars are stretching as far as possible. And immediately when Vera Spencer, the new high school secretary, and I, being brand new, looked at our budget, we saw a lot of areas where we could hopefully consolidate a lot of things, really go line by line and figure out the ways that we can be more efficient with our money and more efficient with the district's money, being the stewards of that money. And so we've really started to hammer out some opportunities to do that. One of the things that we did was we partnered with HR Imaging. Those of you who have kids that have their pictures taken, HR Imaging does a lot of our pictures, and they also do our yearbook as well. So HR Imaging has been doing a lot of things around the school where they have actually been putting up banners for us. This is near the commons where all the kids eat during lunchtime. That banner is roughly 8 feet by 12 feet. It's a huge banner. If you ever get a chance to go down there, check it out. It's really neat. But that's some of the stuff that it sounds like at first, okay, well, what's that doing for our school? Well, we're trying to build the culture. We're trying to build the community and make our students feel proud of the school that they go to and say, obviously, proud to be a Monarch, and really make it something that kids are really proud of. The first thing you see, that's an all-white banner right there. Immediately, people are like, well, people are going to write on it, draw on it, mark on it. It's been up there for the whole half year. No one's even touched it because they take a pride in keeping their building nice. Pictures. It sounds, again, simple, but HR has offered to blow up pictures, poster size. If you go in the main office anytime, you will see black frames. The black frames have inserts on the top that are empty. And so we've got about 15 of them right now. The goal is to get probably around 50. Anytime that we see a picture that HR has taken, we just send it to HR, they blow it up, and we stick that picture in there. One of the big things that we wanted to do was make sure that we're not just putting up athletic pictures. We're putting up pictures of kids from all walks of our student body. And when this picture gets old, that class has graduated, we pop that out, give to somebody in the picture itself, and then put a new picture in there. And we've had so many comments of kids coming in there and getting excited about seeing themselves or their group up there. So we're going to try to continue that program with HR as well. This is a trip to Spain that the kids did. We have that up in one of our pictures, I believe. Footloose, as you know, again, trying to celebrate things where kids don't normally get the celebration that you might if you're on the football team or the basketball team. Scott Stackhouse is going to talk about the maintaining a safe and secure environment.
Yeah, and one of the things that I was going to say,
one
of the things that we do every single day is do everything that we can to make sure that this building is safe. And at the beginning of every year, we make sure that our teachers are Alice trained. A few years ago, we had every person that worked in our district trained. Everybody here knows what Alice training is, correct? I was going to say it's a couple years old now, so I don't need to go over that. But any new staff, they get trained, and then we do refreshers. So we're working with Marysville Police Department right now to make sure that they're prepared, see if there's any new updates, if there's anything else that we need to change within our building, and we will update our staff. Our staff, we get feedback from our staff on professional development. They absolutely love the ALICE training, which I think that's special. You know, I know that they want to teach the kids, but they also want to make sure that they're safe all the time. We have a new school resource officer, Joe Petzinger, who is a 1992 graduate of Marysville High School, and he has done a phenomenal job working here. Just a different set of eyes. You know, we had a school resource officer that did a nice job, but Joe is a different person. He's got a different personality. He is out in the building all of the time. He is talking to kids. Kids will come to the office to see Officer Petzinger, and I think that that is a very positive thing. You know, sometimes they have questions, and they may go to a guidance counselor. They may go to a teacher. That here is another resource that they can come and talk to. So he's done a phenomenal job, and I can tell you from the teacher aspect of it, having Joe in our building, they have noticed, they said, he's always out in the hallways. And he does a phenomenal job. He, you know, early in the day, he's out checking all the doors, but he is always out, you know, and I think that that's been very much so appreciated. Another thing that we're currently working on right now is getting some radio devices. And the goal for that is so that we can have some instant communication between multiple people during the school day, whether that's the administration, with our school resource officer, with our athletic director, and then in the evening activities when we've got football games and soccer games and volleyball games and, you know, some we have trainers up here for some of the kids, but sometimes there's multiple events going on. So we're working on getting some radios this school year. Stacy Hahn is working on that so that we can use those during the course of the day and then our evening activities. And obviously, we always use data to explore what type of discipline are we dealing with here at the high school and what are some of the things that we need to be taking a close look at. Every year, at the end of the year, we pull together this data and we see what type of trends that we're seeing here at the high school and what adjustments we need to make, what ideas we can come up with, some strategies, that sort of thing.
And I would just say, just at the end of that, we're always looking for ways to do discipline differently. Ultimately, we're not talking about being soft on discipline. If you do something that's not appropriate, it's going to be handled swiftly, just as it always has. However, we do know through tons of research that if you suspend a kid for 5 days and there is nothing during that 5 days that is designed to change that behavior, all you're doing is making the situation worse because they've missed school for 5 days. They're upset. They might even think they have a vacation. The kid comes back, they're 5 days behind, they're sitting in the back of the classroom, and they're going to be more disruptive than they were originally. So we're not talking about saying, hey, let's reduce the amount of punishment we give because we'll just make it easier on the kids. We're talking about really what are ways that we can really make it a working punishment. In-school suspension is kind of something that's been tried in the past, but we really want to make sure that we can get kids working on work with the expectation that if you're suspended from school in that type of situation, then you're going to come back doing more work that 5 days than you ever did before. And so those are some things that we're really looking for is what can we do differently? Because again, the 5 days does nothing, and that same exact kid you did for 5 days is the kid that you're gonna suspend for 7 days. In 10 days, and then all of a sudden the kid drops out, says they're going to ECOT, doesn't go to ECOT, and then you've got somebody who is now not graduating from Marysville High School.
The last thing that we were going to talk about is the community partnerships that we are constantly working with. the Union County agencies to discuss drug and alcohol abuse. About a week ago, we met with Holly Zweisick and we met with Mary Haven. We also had an administrator here from North Union High School. We invited Fairbanks, and unfortunately, they weren't able to attend. But we sat down and we talked about Union County. And it was very interesting to have that conversation because I think it was good for Mary Haven to hear what we're dealing with here. They know what they're dealing with at their end. But just to sit down and have conversations to see how we can make everything just work better together. We were able to come up with some solutions for some very simple things and that was a tobacco issue. What we do here at Marysville is different than what they do at North Union. They weren't even aware that they had the ability to write citations for students that were under the age of 18 who had tobacco on them or were using tobacco. And I shared with them what we do. Again, we were talking about what are some alternative things that we can do to prevent kids from being suspended. We really want to use suspensions only as a last resort, you know. So that was a great conversation at the very beginning of the school year. We meet with some district people, Union County Sheriff's Office, Marysville Police Department. Again, Holly Zweisick's involved with that. And we just talk about what we can do to make the school district better. Throughout the building, we have names of people here that we have brought in. Mike Dunn from Honda R&D, Tracy Richardson, her name was already up there, Dorothy Palanda, Detective Nate Stone, Sergeant Don McGlynn. Those two work very closely with our health department. They're in here all the time, and I think that they are an absolute tremendous asset for the youth of Marysville. Barbara Taylor, Jim Basinius, we had him in as a guest speaker talking about bully-proofing the youth, and he would try to give students ways to deal with people who are bullies. The list goes on and on. We have a lot of people in here. We want to get our kids exposed to as many people, as many things as possible, we want to continue building these relationships with the communities. Anything else that you want to?
Just in closing, looking at some of the things that we're going to try next year, we're going to look at trying a ninth grade team, a little bit of a hybrid thing. I know you've heard teaming probably from the middle school. But what we're going to do is have a core group of teachers from social studies, English, math, and science, and some intervention specialists all have the same kids for periods 1, 2, 3, and 4. The idea is we're trying to take a big school and make it a smaller community and try to do anything that we can to make sure that those kids are getting the best start to their high school years that they can. For a student, on a day-to-day basis, academically, it might not look that differently because they're still going to have English first, math second, science third, and so forth. However, what it does is it gives those teachers an opportunity to have discussions about particular kids that are struggling. It gives them an opportunity to work with students inside that four-hour block that are struggling. It also gives them an opportunity to really start to know kids, because instead of the kids traveling around to a bunch of different teachers and this kid's struggling, but the teachers don't have that opportunity to sit down and discuss that, they'll be able to sit down and discuss that. So we're hoping to see with these things that will have hopefully a great transition from 8th grade to 9th grade and give those kids all of those skills in the classroom and outside that are really going to help them. One-to-one training is going to be big. We're going to have half the school with laptops this year. And when you count the computer carts, we're probably up around 70%, 75%. So what we need to do is make sure that our kids are always being taught by the best practices and the best instructors that they can be taught by, and to make sure that our kids, because the technology always is faster with the kids, that they're not ahead of our teachers, and our teachers are right on the cutting edge. Our teachers did a great job this year with that and moving towards Schoology and using the laptops, and they're really hungry to learn even more. But we're going to be partnering with a lot of people internally in the district and externally as well to make sure that they are continuing to be cutting edge. I mentioned the discipline and alternatives, curriculum mapping as well. Just to add a piece to that, we're also going to be looking at assessment writing and making sure that we are analyzing those common assessments and making sure that they are as valid and as are basically affecting positively students' achievement. And if they aren't, then we're going to break them down and build them back up. And so, in closing, I've tell you what, it's tough following you. I want to say ditto or what he said. But I echo a lot of the same sentiments that he does. I can't say it as eloquently, but I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. This is a great district. It's a diamond. I can't believe how lucky I am to be here, and I'm excited to really tackle the future here. And hopefully the honeymoon's not over for me with everybody, but I'm very excited to move forward, and this has been an awesome experience. So thank you very much, and with that, I'll close.
Thank you.
Any questions? Yeah. Does anyone have any questions for Tom?
No, I just want to say it's always exciting to get a review at the end of the year and to see all the things that are going to, again, to see the new opportunities that are going to be open for kids. I think that the school, the community, especially the students and teachers here have some wonderful opportunities before them, and I'm excited for the future. It's great.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's see, public participation. I do have one name on here, Robin Krylo. Is Robin here?
I wonder if she left.
She might have left. Okay. If Robin's not here, all right, last call. Oh, okay. All right. So then, let's see, after that, we are up for the superintendent's report.
All right. So first thing, Mike, would you like to have everyone come up, and then I'll kind of, we are, tonight, we had, I guess over the past year, we had the opportunity to participate in a program called On Board, or correct? That was about producing or implementing energy savings pieces. So tonight, Mike and Jeff are our guys, and I would actually give them the credit for doing the work. Are here with representatives from Weibel Construction, DP&L. That's it, right? Here tonight. Okay. So Ben Ballrath on the end. Obviously, we all know Ben. I feel like so familiar face. And Weibel
Marysville grad.
Right. That's right. Marysville grad. Didn't shortchange you there. It's a United Way. You do just a little bit of everything. So we're happy to have you here. As well as we have Pierce, I believe, okay, and Matt, and Nathan here from Weibel Energy. So I will kind of turn it over to you guys, maybe to talk about the program a little bit and do the presentation as well.
Great. Well, I want to say those are two really tough acts to follow. No, I mean that sincerely. We work in over 70 school districts, and we have the opportunity to get to a lot of board meetings. And your culture and what you talked about tonight hit home to me. I'm in the facility maintenance and energy business, you know, and I think that's pretty cool. But I have to say the things that were said here were, it's top notch. You have a great culture, and I mean that. That's very, very good. Mike and Jeff have been the same way. Mike couldn't stop talking about your STEM school involvement and your, you know, the things you do with Honda. So it's been a good connection that we've had. Ben's with DP&L. Brief history. I won't go as... I'm not that interesting.
Well, one thing we're going to work on with administrators is learning time. I mean, they are given constraints, but it seems
really?
Like we need
they
to
just
work
can't
on
pay attention.
Okay.
It's all the throttling.
We're going to bring in the music like the Academy Awards,
right,
you know.
About 2 years ago, we had a young engineer, an older engineer, attend a meeting with the Educational Purchasing Council, Ken Swank. And Ken had just signed an energy purchase agreement with DPL and DP&L. And out of that agreement, there was a pool of about $50,000. Ken represents roughly 72 DP&L school districts. And he's like, Pierce, what are we going to do with $50,000? You do the math, it's about $700 a district. We make some turn out the lights, please signs or something. So what we decided with Ken was that we'll use the $50,000, Ken, and we would like to benchmark from an energy use standpoint all 72 of your school districts. And we believe, as much as we've read and Googled around, et cetera, that nowhere else in the country has someone taken 72 school districts in a common geographic area and said, what do you spend on energy? And I can tell you that we had ranges in that benchmark from $1.95 a square foot to about 80 cents.
Wow.
And Marysville currently is about, you were 88 cents a square foot, you're down to 86 cents a square foot. Doesn't seem like a whole lot, but over 1.2 million to 1.5 million square feet, mm-hmm, is significant. You are one of the best-run school districts from an energy facility standpoint in our whole survey, within the top five. So you all should be proud of that. Very much. Very obvious you care. I came here tonight, and I'm like, ah, there's lights out. And Mike's like, yep, I told them they could have the meeting if they turned some of the lights out.
We're just glad the air conditioning's on.
Yeah, well, he said you had to run that too. So overall, and I'll be quiet and short here, we were able to save $1.3 million for the 32 districts we did end up working with. And then DP&L came around with $900,000 in rebates. So about a $2.2 million impact, and as you guys know, that's huge in the classroom. So that's all I have to say.
I'll say a couple things real quick. So just go over a little of the specifics just so you guys are aware. This was an energy service agreement. The cost was $20,000 up front. DP&L rebated half of that up front, so the upfront outlay of the district was $10,000. And through that, there were $17,000 in electric and gas savings recognized, and that was through working very closely with Jeff and Ken and the rest of his team, and Mike. As Pierce said, you guys were already pretty low, so trying to attain even more savings was we had to scratch and claw a little bit. Jeff and Ken helped a bunch. So. And what it was is working with the systems that were already in the building. So there was no new equipment installed or anything like that. It was really going back to some of the control systems, especially in some of the older buildings, and kind of reviewing them, pulling them up in the middle of the night and see if there's anything, happening that maybe Jeff thinks it's scheduled off, but there's some little bug in the system that something's running when it's not supposed to be. And then essentially compiling that into a list and then having meetings, regular meetings with these two guys and also Ken, and talking about, hey, these are things we've seen. Maybe Ken can look at it on the one control system, or if it's a different control system, we can take a look at it and make some changes. So really it was a very effective program. Pierce mentioned the energy savings. Two cents a square foot, but on a million square feet, 2 cents is a lot. So, and also it was $3.64 a pupil, but kind of related to the cost reduction per student. And then, so kind of at the end of this program, Pierce mentioned the additional rebates. So there was a meeting down in Aileron, which is a facility down by Dayton. We're based out of Vandalia. And DP&L presented a bunch of rebate checks, so we wanted to kind of have Ben maybe re-present that check this evening. And we also brought a little plaque with a picture of Mike and Jeff from that meeting, just to kind of recognize your participation and thank you for taking a chance and working with us. So,
great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll get you guys another little picture here.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There we go.
There we go. Get in there, Mike. Get in there. Matt, get in there. You want to get a picture?
Nice.
Thank you very much. You guys are quite
thank
a team,
so
believe
thank
me.
You so
I've
much.
Seen them all.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. That's super. What you're doing, that's very appreciated.
Hey. Just funds were in the greatest place to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate that. And Mike and Jeff, thanks for all your hard work. Thank you.
I think it's always good to remember, you know, the more that we can save on our operations side, then the more opportunities we're able to provide for kids. And while, to be honest, it's not too much different than home, running right. behind your kids and flipping the light switches on, right. we have to do a lot of those same things. And Mike and Jeff are great leaders of that initiative. And all the teasing we do about the air conditioning turn off, it all pays off in the long run.
I just joked about that.
Yeah. In the wintertime, better wear your extra layers. You're sitting there because it's a little cold, guys. So, all right. Other things I'd like to talk about. We had 150 staff members participate, K-12 in professional development the week, I guess 2 weeks after school. Was out. We had 526 different learning opportunities for those teachers, so pretty robust. Some of those included Google Educator training, Teach and Learn Like a Pirate, Chromebook, Schoology, flipped classroom content, blended learning, reading fluency and vocab. So really a robust set of offerings, high engagement of our staff. This week we also finished with Navin Elementary, the early college high school, some representatives from Creekview, our first leg of competency-based education training with EdWorks that was very successful, is on the agenda tonight as well. I also wanted to give you an update on kindergarten enrollment. Looking into next year, we already have 361 kids registered for kindergarten. Yay. This year, as a reminder, we had 377 students enrolled. So we haven't even hit August,
right.
where we tend to see people come in at that time.
Wow.
So really great numbers to date.
Right.
So we continue to watch that and keep an eye on class sizes as we move forward. As I mentioned to you that our spring results were in from third grade reading, remember that the numbers I sent you, and I'll review them this evening, are not the final numbers. There'll still be data cleanup, and there will still be, the state will take the higher of the two. So remember, they also took a fall assessment and a spring assessment. So it is possible maybe a student passed in the fall that did not in the spring. So that was just the, what I sent yesterday. Was that yesterday
just
or
the
day before?
Yeah.
It was just the results of the spring test.
Okay.
As a district, we were 68%. Edgewood was 71%. Mill Valley had 50% passage. Navin had 71% passage, Northwood had 81% passage, and Raymond had 65% passage. So we'll be moving forward with those. I think you already heard from Steve some of the things we have set up in moving forward to next year. Anticipating those continuing to increase. Remember, also looking at last year's data compared to this year's data is a park assessment to an air assessment is to, right? So this is our kind of first snapshot baseline with this test, and we'll be building forward. Hopefully this will continue to be the assessment the state engages with for a while, so we have some opportunity to grow under that.
And one thing I just was noting that, you know, like when you look at Raymond, I think they only have 52 students. So, you know, you look at that percent, and one or two, a change of one or two students changes that percent.
Right.
Yeah, and
somewhat
if you look at the chart
right.
I sent you as well, they had a significant number of students score in those upper areas.
Right.
Right. But still, we're not going to be
exactly
we're not where we want
right.
to
right.
be
yeah.
in some of the schools for sure. So we still have some work
exactly.
to do.
I
think we're very pleased with the growth at Edgewood and Navin. We do know it's a more rigorous test. We know those are more of our special needs populations. For different reasons, and certainly they performed well. As you have heard in their presentation, some
right.
of the just pinpoint interventions and knowing every single kid and creating a personalized learning atmosphere
yes.
for those students
right.
is really
yeah.
paying off. So
yeah,
that's all I have this evening.
Okay. Treasurer's report.
Okay, a few items I wanted to update you on. One, just looking briefly at the cash flow, still cash flow is looking very strong. And one item I wanted to point out was our Bureau of Workers' Compensation payments. The payment comes each May, and we saved over $50,000 compared to last year. So that's managed by our business manager and our HR director. So we're seeing the fruits of their labor.
Right.
The rate had come down based on claims and usage. So that was great news. We have the fiscal year 17 appropriations on the agenda tonight. Just a kind of a highlight of those. The appropriations basically just sets a spending limit. Just because it's appropriated doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be spent. If you look at the fiscal year 17 appropriations compared to last June when we were presenting the fiscal year 16 appropriations, there's an increase of about $4 million. Really, the main driver of that increase is our switch to self-insurance, because really the general, you're basically accounting for those insurance expenditures twice, because the general fund expends it and it goes over to the self-insurance fund, where then you expend the money out for the claims. So that's really the main driver there. If you look at the fiscal year 17 appropriations compared to where we are now in our fiscal 16 appropriations as of right now, they're really pretty similar. There's a slight increase for 17. The general fund appropriations match the five-year forecast. A lot of other numbers in there are going to be estimates, and those will, those will increase as we go. A couple items to highlight with our federal grants. We do know our allocations now for next year, and those, ultimately end up changing. But usually for the better. Our Title I revenue will go up $33,000. The biggest increase was with our IDAB, our special education grant. We're getting an additional $65,000 this year. So that was very good news, because that grant especially was starting to get pushed to the limits a little bit. So that'll give us a little bit of breathing room. So that was good news. And as I mentioned, that is a lot of those numbers are estimates. So that's where you'll see each month I'll be, I usually bring some appropriations adjustments. No different this month. We have a couple of adjustments in there. We're increasing our straight A fund by $25,000. We just received an additional straight A grant. This is one that we kind of partnered with the Franklin County ESC. So that $25,000 we received, so we're increasing for that. And finally, I wanted to note, we're increasing the Permanent Improvement Fund by $750,000. That is related to the stadium parking lot project. The reason for that dollar amount, a big chunk of the money we were able to use by changing projects around. A lot of it is we planned on a certain amount of paving this year. We were able to move that around and just hit the most important need items and use that money towards this project. So that $750,000 is for the part of the project that we couldn't get by moving other items around and reprioritizing. So on the agenda tonight, there is a resolution called a resolution of urgent necessity. We originally set out bids for the stadium parking lot project. The project, calling it the stadium parking lot project really doesn't do it justice, because it is a very large project. It really addresses what I'd kind of call an eyesore as you drive towards the high school. So the biggest pieces of that project would be to pave the gravel parking lot that is behind the Early College High School and the stadium. We're going to be having juniors and sophomores at the Early College High School, so more and more kids will now be driving, so that'll provide a safe parking lot for them. Also, obviously, would help for, with football games, having a good parking lot there. We've got the transportation parking lot is there just on the other side. Part of that project as well is a new fueling station. The goal of that is actually to be able to save money on our fuel and be able to get a better rate on the fuel that we buy. Another piece of that is adding some additional storage space to the maintenance building. You probably notice when you drive by on the tennis court, there's a lot of different equipment sitting out there. It's not really good for the equipment, but we don't have any place to put it. So putting this additional building will hopefully lengthen the lifespan of some of that equipment which ultimately would save some money as well. Unfortunately, when those bids came in last week, there were only two, and both were over 10% of what the estimate was, the estimate of $1.65 million. By state law, when the bids are over 10%, you really couldn't even accept them if we wanted to. So it's kind of back to the drawing board. What can we do to move forward? Some of the companies we talked to still wanted to try to make something happen, but we needed to do something else. So we spoke with our attorney. So that's where we come with the resolution, due to the fact that the bids were rejected, and that there's a resolution to reject those bids on tonight as well. And also based on the timing, the short time frame, we need to get this thing moving to turn around in time to have it ready for school and those different things. The urgent necessity resolution would allow us to go out and actually talk to the different vendors that were interested in this project. We can actually talk to multiple and see about, maybe this vendor could do this part of the project, because one of the vendors put a bid on just for the parking piece, where another vendor, put in for the whole thing. So some of those, maybe getting them to work together to save some money. The amount that we put in is for $2.1 million. The reason we picked that number is there was actually a vendor who didn't even submit a bid because he knew it was above that dollar amount, but it was around $2.1 million. So I guess we looked at that as a worst-case scenario. There's someone out there that would do the entire project for that $2.1 million. But, as I said, our hope is to be able to move forward, solicit bids, talk to these vendors, and try to, work it down to a number below that.
I know. I did. I had a chance to talk to Mike this afternoon. I just happened to see him in another building, and he did explain some about the whole issue of supply and demand right now. Mm-hmm. That there's a lot of demand out there for paving, and that has driven up the prices caused some issues there.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was one of the things we talked about. Is would we just be better off to wait?
Right.
Maybe if we waited, the cost would go down. But we spoke to some construction companies that we've worked with, and they are, they're already booked out several years down the road. So really, you would either be looking at waiting multiple years, or the potential of waiting and just watching costs go up even further.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Thank you for that explanation. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Let's see. Board President report. I just also wanted to comment how smoothly graduation went. We had wonderful weather. I thought it was run very efficiently, thanks to Vera and all her coordinating efforts. Got a lot of positive comments from parents and guests that I saw in the community. So I also attended a chamber board meeting this morning, and they are our YEA program that we helped host at our early college high school was recognized as a top 20 program out of 70 programs countrywide, and this is just in their first year, so they were very proud of that accomplishment. This last Saturday, Dick and I held a community coffee at Brookdale, and mm-hmm. I don't know, would you like to make any comments about that right now?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity to meet with and talk with some of the residents at Brookdale. They had great questions. Hopefully we were able to provide them with the answers. It was a great location, mm-hmm. And we've been invited to come back. So,
yeah, I know we talked about even maybe having a board meeting there in the summertime, so just kind of nice to help update them a little bit about how things are changing in the classroom and some of the programs that we've got going in our high school, and we do have a nice partnership there as well. There's some students that volunteer, and then we also have some of our kids in some of the business classes go out there and help them with their technology, help teach some of those residents how to use their iPads and send emails and all that kind of stuff. Also, we had a real productive work session last week to discuss some survey results, I think as a district, as a board, we're really interested in knowing what perceptions are out there, what our community thinks about our school district, what they think about taxes, how they think we're managing our money, how they think, you know, what kind of education we're providing our students. So, again, I think we had a good conversation, and it kind of gave us an opportunity to look at the results and say, now, do we think that their perception matches what we know to be true? And when there's a difference, it kind of guides us in how information that we need to provide to maybe educate our community and let them know the great things that are going on here. So I thought that was great. This morning I attended the BASE end of summer camp presentation. Its BASE program is just amazing. So they held a 3-week camp, about 28 kids attended, and they had 4 areas. They had a bike shop, and all the students did presentations. So for the bike shop, the students actually demoed fixing a flat tire. And, you know, it was great to see them do the presentation and show what they had learned. They had an outdoor adventures group where they combined math, science, reading, and physical activity, and just did so many different projects. I couldn't believe it was just a 3-week camp. They had a tech group, and these kids actually learned how to build a computer, and they also bought a kit for an arcade gaming station. They built that. They ran out of time to actually program it, but they have the software to put things like Pac-Man and all those fun games that we used to play when we were in college. So you could just see how engaged they were and how much fun they had and how much they learned, and then to actually present in front of their parents and other people attending was really impressive. And the last area was the soapbox derby. And we were lucky to have a lady, I can't remember her name, but she heads it up in Columbus, and she actually helped teach this class. And so they used the smaller models. They also did the full-size models. They learned about physics and science and all those kinds of fun things. And one student said his favorite thing about it was winning every race, and he was pretty vocal about it. So that was fun. And really, it just kind of highlighted everything that we want to do as a district, because the students were working together. We had great community partnerships. They learned real life skills. They had they did field trips to businesses in our downtown area, and heard the people that run these businesses, heard about what they do every day and the kind of skills that they need to be successful. So again, that was great, and I'm just excited to also hear about all the professional development that's going on over the summer. So we're going to be very well prepared for next year. And next up, Ohio High Point Report, Mr. Chivington.
Hey, good evening.
Hello there.
All right. You know, I entered this role partway through the school year, and I didn't really realize the impact that Marysville had on Ohio High Point until I was sitting in the convocation and watching the students walk down Campbell Hill and how many blue caps and gowns there were walking down. And so Marysville is very, very well represented. And if you haven't experienced that, it's quite a sight to see all the students walk down the hill. So just kind of wrapping up the school year, one of the significant points, starting August 1st, there will be a new director for the main campus of Ohio High Point. And her name is Tanya Ramsey, and she'll be coming from Tulsa. Mm-hmm. And so we're excited about the change in leadership there. And Shelley will still be part of High Point, but she's just changing roles, and so it's a mutual agreement there. And so we're excited about Tanya coming on board. Just to recap, and many of these items you've already heard, but from the health technology area, the first year students successfully completed their STNA program, and they were preparing for their state exam last month. And many of the seniors have finished their EQG course and was actually waiting on their results from Clark State. Forced seniors in the health technology area actually walked with the National Honor Society Corps. And one of the health technology students was one of your valedictorians here at Marysville High School. From the supply chain side, one student was recognized in the top 35 in the nation in the DECA program. And so that was a nice enhancement. Also, a student in the manufacturing engineering program, or the manufacturing engineering program itself, was awarded an MK case you don't know, a $5,000 grant from CenturyLink. And so that program will be getting this additional funding through that. I think we heard last month, but 10 students actually from the agribusiness program received their state FFA degree. And some of the newly elected officers will be going through their training in a retreat at Mohegan State Park here this summer. The new handbook was approved. We've got a new course catalog coming out, so we're excited about that. Unfortunately, we did have a resignation, Sally Andrews, from the Marysville Satellite Health and Technology has resigned effective July 31st. And we've got some professional development coming for the Marysville side. Ashley Thompson, one of the ag instructors, will be accompanying 15 students to California to an educational tour. And actually next week, the 25th through July 2nd. And the board approved Rick Allen from the Marysville Pre-Engineering Instructor Program to attend a computer numerical controls training program. I have no idea what that is. In Chicago.
I know that,
We've invited J.J. Martin and his students who achieved that Six Sigma certification to come next week and have the board recognize them. So the four or five students that didn't receive that will be presented to the board next week in the June meeting. So that wraps up the year.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate you representing us. Thank you. Legislative report, Mr. Smith.
It's short. The legislature is not in session. It won't be until November. And so, yes, they're waiting until after the election. And so they may have a session in November, but there's ongoing discussion, but no activity.
Okay. It's just an opportunity for you to have coffee with them and keep them in the air about things, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Safety and Drug Committee report.
Well, we won't have our meeting until next Tuesday. But in the meantime, medical marijuana in Ohio, as you know, has become the 25th state to allow for legal use of marijuana. Governor Kasich signed the HB 523 earlier this month. So what we need to know from here, it will be fully operational 2 years after the bill's effective date. So it'll be 2 years, it'll be fully operational. How can a person get marijuana? A certified physician will be able to recommend marijuana for a variety of conditions set forth in the bill. 20 qualifying conditions have already been listed as applicable for medical marijuana card in Ohio only if your physician makes a recommendation at this point. So some of those are AIDS, lateral sclerosis, Alzheimer's, cancer, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, seizures, fibromyalgia, glaucoma, Hep C, bowel disease, Tourette's syndrome, traumatic brain injury. So right now they're on the higher end of, you know, except a few. There's a few in there that they kind of had a problem with, but how much marijuana can a person have? They can have a 90-day supply with a physician making the determination on how much they can have. The physician will determine the form of marijuana to be used and will reevaluate after 90 days of the dose and form. The forms that are going to be able to be used are oil, tinctures, plant material, edibles, patches, and any other form approved by the Board of Pharmacy. Smoking is not going to be permitted under this law. However, vaporizing is permitted. Okay. So, it's yet to be determined how schools will respond to allowing medical marijuana to be distributed to students or for staff for use. So that is still up in the air. Some institutions that receive federal funding have not adopted the state rule on marijuana use for fear of losing federal funding. So much remains to be seen because now it's in a battle between state and federal because federally it's still not approved for use. So you know, it's quite a situation that we'll just have to wait and see how everything comes down. So, and that's it. And then we'll have our quarterly meeting on Tuesday.
Okay.
That's it.
Thank you. All right. At this time, I would accept a motion to approve the minutes from both our May 19th regular board meeting and our June 6th special meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, we need a motion to approve the treasurer items.
So moved.
Motion by Mrs. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith.
Pretty well highlighted, most significant in the report, so if there's any questions, that's...
No questions.
No. Just like, it's nice seeing a cash flow statement and a healthy ending cash balance right now, so that's great. Okay, roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, we need a motion to approve the superintendent items.
So moved.
Motion by Mrs. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith.
Several employment, matter of fact, chemistry teacher interview offered and on the agenda tonight, all today. So we're excited about that ad. As well, I definitely wanted to point out, too, that Mary Ann Conley did submit her retirement letter. It will be effective in December. We are going to hire someone. We believe Mary Ann is special commodity for Marysville, and certainly want the opportunity for someone to learn and grow and be connected to Mary Ann's connections. So they'll have that first semester to work together. So she was excited about that as well. So wish her well. I know it was a tough decision, so definitely wish her well. We have extended day contracts in as well as supplementals. Any supplemental advisor or coach that has not completed PAV CPR requirements is not on the list, so the list did change over the week. If they had not started, those were removed. So you're seeing only those who have completed those requirements. Some additional seasonal employment, as well home instructor, instructor substitutes as well. We have several overnight trips listed, golf trip for girls, camp for a basketball team, and a cheerleading camp as well.
They're actually there right now.
They are. They are. Also, you received a handbook and several things here this evening as well. You received them electronically prior. On here is also the urgent necessity that Todd referred to. And the rejection for the stadium parking lot project bids that we received currently.
And last but not least, MEA agreement?
Yes, I was going to hit that.
Okay.
The MEA agreement is on here. I know last month we approved salary schedules, but that has now been forwarded to us from legal, so everything is included in there. Highlights of what we already share, but that is the acceptance of the tentative agreement that we reached with the union.
Any questions?
No, I just, I know small things, but setting up accounts for the Japanese National Honor Society and also for Unified Arts, I think it's nice that we can, as a board, help to facilitate some of those extra opportunities.
Right. They're trying to move those out of principal funds, right? And so they're a little more open and they can take more responsibility for that. So.
Right. And that's just more opportunities for our students.
Absolutely.
So certainly, good. If you had the opportunity to meet the kids in Japanese Honor Society today, or
I
this
did.
Year,
yes.
Not today, but
yeah.
they were amazing.
Yes, they were.
Amazing kids. So.
Yeah. Right. And I know we had just talked about, when you talked about Mary Ann Conley and everything, I mean, I had made the comment that I, even though she says she's resigning or retiring at the end of December, that I would be amazed if we don't continue to see her in our school district, because she just loves to help out.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Okay. How about a roll call?
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries.
Okay, if I could have a moment, then yes. I would like to introduce to you the new girls basketball coaches here by Stacy Hahn, Mindy Eisnagel, and she joins us from Jonathan Alder. We interviewed just this week as well, right? Or was it late last week? Kind of runs together. So Mindy has joined us and started camp this week, I believe, as well.
We've rescheduled the other youth camp, but she has shown up at some summer league games already.
Okay. So we're excited to have her come on board and be a part. Certainly her interest in, connecting with kids, and it's more about developing young women. And certainly we want to win basketball games, but certainly creating the opportunity to learn those larger lessons of teamwork and collaboration and interdependence are important. So,
great. Welcome.
Mindy, you're welcome to say anything if you'd like. It's kind of a weird atmosphere, I know, but I appreciate you coming tonight, and we're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Okay, then we are to the comments and questions from board members. So, Mr. Smith.
Had an opportunity at Raymond Elementary. They had a roar rally at the end of the year, and it was a fantastic experience. Fourth grade did the last rally. Each class had responsibility for planning and presenting a rally during the course of the year. And the fourth graders wrote the entire script, performed the entire script. It was an amazing presentation focused really on their social studies projects and learning this year. And that was remarkable. Want to also say I really miss Ed tonight.
I know.
Mm-hmm. And I know Amy and I had fun trading back and forth on who would move and who would second all the motions tonight. but hope that
hopefully we'll see
that he'll be able to join us at some point. So.
Right.
But our thoughts very much with him. So.
Right. I also you didn't make any comment about the fourth grade presentation at Raymond, but I happen to know that King Smith was mentioned, that you maybe even had a cameo appearance.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that, you've got a future book here, My Year as a King.
It may continue into next year.
Okay,
too,
so. All right. That was fun to see, to see that going on. I want to just say, too, about Ed and his family, holding him in prayer and hoping for the best. But it's just great to be part of, to have people come from out of our district to congratulate what a district we have and how you guys represent our district and everything. Mm-hmm. Really makes you feel good that you're part of such a great team. And I just appreciate being able to be on the board and to be a part of this team.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for all representing us like you do. So it's wonderful.
I echo that, my family's praying for Ed and hope everybody else here would do the same.
Yes.
Also, I thank Steve and Tom for the presentations today. I think the reputation of being a little tight, but, when they're giving, powerful presentations like that, it makes it a little easier to loosen the purse strings.
Good job, fellas.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So I would like to say, too, certainly I have not been in the district very long, but have had the pleasure to get to know Ed. And he has touched so many families in Union County, not just Marysville. So I do believe in the strength of this community and the strength of coming together around someone and some family, regardless of that, the outcome. I know that they feel very supported by the thoughts and prayers and continual, best wishes in their direction. So I know it's very difficult, and at a time where he was supposed to be in Disney with his grandchildren, unfortunately, he's somewhere else. So we just keep hoping that he can keep fighting.
Right. Definitely. And I would just also
second the thanks for our wonderful presentations tonight, and thank you to Jeff and Mike for all the work you do, saving money so that we can spend it on programs for the kids. That's great. So, and maybe on a good note, let's remember all of these wonderful fathers out there. It's Father's Day this coming Sunday, so we hope that our fathers have a wonderful day. We appreciate everything they do supporting our kids and helping our community. So with that, how about a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Smith and second by Mrs. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Vine?
Yes. The meeting is, the motion carries and our meeting is adjourned.